3 of today. And so, yeah, this office, just to introduce it for 1 second, is part of the larger group show called Interior Resonances, which celebrates the 10-year anniversary of the gallery. And this is a sound installation that also hosts a lot of live programming. And today, guest artist in the Plasticity office is Seth Kluet, and he already played 2 times, so this is the 3rd set. I'm personally excited to see
really
the 3rd time.
No mistakes.
And yes, with that, I'm just handing it over.
So today I decided that I would introduce things. I normally don't say anything, but normally I have a table full of objects, and you get to discover a little of the sound level. I'm touching the things that are in front of you, you can see them. But I normally never perform like at a laptop without anything else. So here's what's inside. I don't want to hide it from you. There's things going on. Tonight's performance is unedited, unaltered recordings. They are recorded with an ambisonic microphone, which is a microphone that can record sound at 360 degrees. 10 of the 12 sound files are the sound of my body, hands, objects doing things near or around the microphone. Wrapping stuff around the microphone, putting the microphone in things, picking up. So you're inside of stuff. You're in the middle of objects. And then juxtaposing that against field recordings, things outside in the world. So 2 different field recordings, one that's Riverside Park in between the Hudson River and the West Side Highway. There's a very condensed area of that at about 125th Street where you have more layers of different kinds of sounds than anywhere else I can imagine. It's like the Hudson River, then the riverbank, and the docks, and a boat, and the bike path, and the picnic tables, and the ground traffic, and the highway traffic, and the Amtrak train. And you know, and it's one of these things where there's this expanding universe of layers of sound. I'd have to do anything, place a sound where my head is, make a recording. I will say I waited for 17 minutes for a quiet moment, and I just gave up. Which explains the other field recording, which is the only thing that was recorded within the last 2 weeks, which is a field recording I made some years ago for an exhibition. Where I took the same microphone out to the forest behind Henry Cowell's house, and the composer Henry Cowell's house in Bearsville, New York, which is outside of Woodstock. And I recorded the sound of the wind through the trees next to one of the John Cage built a bunch of stacked stone sculptures in the back of Henry Cowell's house. And the people who live there now own a record label, so they were like, yeah, you can come and do this. And so that's the peace and quiet. I couldn't get myself to a place where it was quiet enough. I went to Center Park, I went to Prospect Park, could hear traffic in the background of everything. So I cheated, I took an old field recording of the forest, and I'm using that. All right, and it'll last around 30 minutes, just so you're not surprised. You can pace yourselves. increasingly. Okay, so two things. One, the title piece, static slice of time, the preceding phrase is space, static slice of time, from a really interesting feminist Marxist geographer named Doreen Massey. Writes a lot about like people's patterns and work behaviors and the presence of the body in space while they labor, and then the effect that the environment has on how they do that work. And so, as I've been thinking about like my relationship to my instrument, my relationship to sound, you know, spatial audio is funny. Like people want to put it in a lot of speakers and then fly it around the room, and it becomes a gimmick about like the entertainment side, the Atmos, like, oh, there's an airplane flying over, and that's about like entertainment consumption modalities. And so for me, I'm just trying to figure out like what role my body has if it's going to participate in spatial audio. And when Daniel sent me this invitation, I was excited because we had done a performance together in Santiago, Chile, in a cistern. It had like a 30-second reverberation. And I realized in that moment that that spatial audio, like where I said a word and it lasted for another 30 seconds past when I opened my mouth, and then I could walk across the room and like walk through the sound I had just made, and I would have like, you know, a 20-second walk across the room, and I'm still walking in sound I had made when I was on the other side. I realized that like there's a relationship my body can have to this thing. So I live in New York City, in West Harlem. It's constantly noisy. What can I do? And so like, working with the microphone in a way that is space agnostic. It's not about the space, it's about how the hands interact with the sound capture device. That for me feels like, it's the difference between like landscape photography and photograms, like where you're in the dark room and you're like shining light at the paper while you develop it, and it makes shapes and gestures that are the results of your body's motions. And so that juxtaposition of like sounds with corporeal bodies in my hand, touching them, and then open space that's like environmental, city, urban space, and then rural, and like that, how much even more open that space is. That's sort of where the premise for the exploration came from. Yeah.
So, kind of in that realm, like, what do you think of the phenomenology? I have problem with that. Of the like the sounds and the gesture you're presenting, because I feel like, you know, it almost feel like you're not trying to capture like or sound like a boss or sound like this space, and you're playing with perception in this way. So I was wondering if you thought about that.
Yeah, without being like polemical, like a lot of the stuff that like when artists read about phenomenology, they like read Merleau-Ponty and Husserl, and then like if they're electronic musicians, they read like Schaefer's terrible misinterpretation of Husserl. And the common denominator there is like a very male gaze version of what like phenomenology is. It's like a body that's an object, and then it experiences the world, and there's like primacy to like me sitting here digesting input, and then like I explain the world through the input I've digested. So what happens if we like blur the space between body and landscape, body and room, body and object, and look inside bodies and outside bodies, and where the body like seams start to fray? Like there's more material in that space if you're not so dichotomous about like I am a body, ego perceives the world, which is phenomenology's whole jam. instead of trying to like take the I love perception. Like I'm an artist, I walk through the world and I vacuum up as much of the world as I can, and then it inevitably affects what I do. But if you start to treat the world like an object, then you bring a politics back into the world.
I think the ambulance at the end was you.
No.
Really? Never mind. There's no question. It was such a beautiful moment.
Yeah, it was the ambulance outside.
It lined up with what, that was amazing.
I was wondering about that because for me, it was so clear when I was hearing the real street noise versus the controlled sound in here, which was sort of...
Depending on where you are in the circle.
I guess that's it, because you could always hear it filtered by the wall in the doorway.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was wondering, like, does that noise bother you more when you have ambisonics?
No, it never bothers me at all. I worked with Paul Malabres for 20 years, and so in that process, it's sort of like, I never shut off the room. Like, if I'm playing and I'm making sound and something happens down the hall, that's part of the show. That's part of, I can't deny that just because I didn't make it doesn't mean like it's not part of what you experience as being mine. And so I have to just own the presence of the things that come from other places. And so I had a great experience actually doing a version of this that involves objects on a table. Like, so my normal set is like things and boxes and glass jars, and you see me work with my hands. And I was doing a version of the set at Phil Niblock's loft, which is like on Center Street just over here, and the windows were open and the street was crazy noisy and there were jackhammers, and I was just like, I could fight it or I could lean into it. And I was just found like it, like philosophy, like leaning into things instead of rejecting the reality as it is usually a much smoother way to go about life. But yeah, that ambulance was outside. And also, fun thing, I didn't edit out any time the cars honked on 125th Street when I was recording in my office in Prentice. So, like, there are honks that are on Riverside Drive through the window of my office that would have shown up in this recording coming from that side. So if you heard a honk mid-thing, it could have been on the street, it could have been, because you can't shut New York City off. Like, that's part of that. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Can you share some of the thing that you work with the mic? Like,
No, the first group had fun with what the sounds were, so I can play them. So this is a big piece of bubble wrap wrapped around the mic. And so it's the kind of bubble wrap that's got like an inch and a half things that's like used to pack stuff. And it's really tacky and it was humid out, so I had my hands on the thing, and as I pull my hands across, it snaps like when you snap across a balloon. Then there's a version of that that's a small bubble wrap bag over the microphone, and it barely fits. And this is me trying not to move my hands, but like it's catching every little tiny thing. There's gong being bowed. But while I'm bowing it, I'm moving it around the microphone, so the spherical microphone is panning when the gong moves around. This is a cake pan being played by a rubber Super Bowl. Sounds like a whale.
Why was it important for you to have a quiet recording in this?
wasn't. I didn't stop it. I didn't edit it. I just went in my office, closed the door, and made the recordings.
I mean, why was it important for you to find that, to use that old recording that was
quiet? Oh, yes, that one. Yeah. I just wanted something peaceful. I wanted outdoor spaciousness where you couldn't. So, like, there's that feeling of, like, so everybody talks about, like, contest a lot. And, like, I'm in a mountain, and that mountain's so big, and I'm so small, and, like, you know, like, that's my summary of the sublime. Oh, I'm so big, I'm so small. I'm worthless. There's something else about, like, the horizon, that, like, over there is infinite, and I can't ever get over the crest. And there's something about New York City that makes bodies of us by how little space it affords us in terms of our acoustic perceptual distancing, right? So if I'm sitting in a room, if I'm sitting outside, there are sounds happening at every layer between my head and infinity, and I'm never going to hear far away because it's masked by close. And what that means is that my body's left to be sort of alone. And like New York makes it, like, it feels closed in. And I'm from a very rural part of upstate New York. Like, we were on 180 acres, and our driveway was like a quarter mile long, and there was a mile on either end of the driveway before the nearest neighbor. And so for me, when I hear, like, when I sit and I listen from that space, I can hear a sound coming from half a mile away. And the wind would come over the treetops, and you wouldn't feel wind. And it would break the tree's edge, and then you feel wind on the hair of your arms. And like you're like, that's wind over there, it's an object, and then it breaks the tree and it touches your arm, and you're like, I'm a body. And there's an interesting ability to see oneself in the landscape in that thing that New York fights you. You have to decide you want to engage the landscape in a spatial way. Otherwise you're like, you know, if I'm just small enough, no one will notice me on the subway, right? So that's why I needed the quiet in order to have something that was that vast or open.
Because everything else is very close.
Everything else is very close, and including the Foley recordings, which are very claustrophobic. But it might be like you are inside of the sound field of something that is that big, right? So, yeah. Was Anna over here? No, you had Anna.
Yeah. So kind of about this, like, I feel like there's a level of subjectivity always in sound recording and found sounds, and especially what you said really reminds me of Westerkamp's Kids Beach sound log, and
sure.
How, you know, certain sounds are the city are filtered out and then added in because, you know, she was afraid of the city and then the city was better.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, kind of following the last question, when you were talking about dichotomy and then this idea of, like, the Cartesian listening, like, what is your thoughts in sourcing and then kind of, I guess, leaving something along and then, but, like, having choices in the composition?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I try not to fetishize the objects. That might be obvious from the way that I talk about things, but I also, with the soundscape, I think this is important. Like, Westerkamp and Armory Schaefer and, like, the whole enterprise of acoustic ecology and started in Canada. There's a really interesting writing now by this guy, Dylan Robinson, who's writing about, like, indigenous kind of slapdown of the acoustic ecology mission, because what they're basically saying is, I have this pioneer mentality. I go out into the forest and I capture these sounds, and I'm the first person who's heard them this way, right? And it's got a very, like, the sound I go get, I'm, like, my ego went and got it. I found it, I discovered it, it's mine, right? That's a colonial, settler colonial mentality. So with the objects in my studio, everything I recorded is something that I have a close connection with. And by close connection, I mean I kept it, because I just get rid of everything that I don't care about, and the things I keep I like. And so I just looked around my room and found the things that I could make sound with my microphone. And the hope is that in that relationship, I shed the tension of, like, the object as being, like, I, like, a lot of field recordists or sound folded people will be like, I stuck my hand in like macaroni and cheese, and inside the mac and cheese there was, you know, this thing, and they're like, it's secrets and like how I got this sound, and it's like that all to me is like hyper masculine posturing and like that way of thinking about like this is the sound I found. Like I can't do that. Yeah.
Do you ever worry about predictability?
Do I think about what?
Predictability.
Oh, good question. Okay, well I will say, I'm a composer underneath it all. But even if I study composition before I went to art school. And so like there's a part of me that always thinks to structure things in time. I just can't get away from it as my brain goes, I'm gonna take these pitches out of my structure in time. And I'm stuck with that way of being as a human. I feel like when I did this, I would like blow the gong and be like, oh, that's really interesting. And then I did test recordings with all the objects first. I'm going to blow the gong, I'm going to blow the cake pan, I'm going to touch the vase. And then I was like, wait, vase sound is very close to gong sound pitch. Can I get the gong to be a little closer to vase so that I can like merge those two things so there's less object definition around the seams of the recordings so that like as you move through, there's some more, I don't want to call it organic because that like implies like primacy of the, or like an inevitability to the flow. But I do, how do I say this? Like, if it's just me with a laptop and there's only things for you to listen to, I have to do what I can to make it not unpredictable, but the way that like nature's unpredictable, the way it's like if you loop someone walking in the forest too soon, we hear the same rhythm and then we divorce from the suspension of disbelief. And so with these, I try to avoid that. And one of the ways around it is like, I have the ability to play 8 files at once. And so I have some files that when I press go on them, it propagates the player, the faders, with versions of the other ones that are starting at different places and rotated in the room. And so that way, if I bring one up and I bring another one up, they're the same sound, but they're two different parts of the recording, and they'll never overlap in the same way. So you get infinite. It's like a 3-minute recording, but it becomes like an infinitely variable. Yeah.
Did you overlay any of the sounds?
Oh, they're all overlaid. Well, I mean, like probably no more than 3 at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. No more. It gets noisy if 3 people are talking at the same time. 4. Well, thank you for being so attentive and for having such thoughtful questions and staying as long as you did. It's my pleasure.